this is a spur of the moment special cataloging cocktails.
It's our typical Friday rant session we're trying to go do, which we're doing at my favorite brewery here in Austin, Lazarus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we have,
but this time with a guest.
Oh man, what a!
This is the first of a first, right? That we've ever done.
Like, I know. I just pressed it. Right. I have to be Austin.
Are you excited? You're the first ever guest for
a Friday
rant session.
And the rant session was supposed to be just to be just fancy.
I'm intruder here. So I just kind of chime in.
Special guest.
By the way, but people may be watching, and they may see you. But for folks who are listening only, like, who are you?
I'm Jesus Barraza. I'm old friend of Juan Tim, a bit more recent, but I've been in the graph knowledge management, semantic space for so many years. So I'm now with Neo J. I'm the field CTO for AI with Neo. And
glad that you're just here in Austin, kind of
I just came for this opportunity. I just come and have a drink.
Just to be on the show.
Exactly. There you go. That was the
This is the no bullshit show, man.
Customer meetings, and when you're in Austin, you have to meet these two guys because they're the most celebrities in the data space here. So that's
really cool. Anyway, so this is what's on your mind? What's on our mind? What's happened this week?
What's happened this week? I don't know when you guys kick it off. I feel like there's
we're going to, of course, talk about graphs.
I'm in front of Juan, and we cannot not talk about ontologies and semantics.
Yeah. There was a show before the show, which was that Juan and Jesus started talking about ontology. What's the definition of ontology? So I feel like that's a good way to get like an hour long rant.
You already want to get into that stuff?
No, we'll
get there.
We have to share that we have some common roots, right? So we did, the connection, we did part of our research,
so
the same team. So that's, I'm sure we're going to agree on a number of things. So probably it's not going to be the most.
I think our academic scientific backgrounds are both in building knowledge graphs way before there were knowledge graphs.
Semantic layer, right?
Semantic ontologies from relational databases. That was our stuff.
And
the team in Spain is our
that's right, that's the common connection many years ago, and many years later ontologies are popular again and everyone wants to go. For so many years you brought the O word and people would just look away, and now want to talk about
it. Now it's cool.
And ontologies are stored as YAML, right?
In any way.
Well, the syntax and the semantics, two different things. So yes, they can be stored in.
We'll see if I can annoy you guys. Well, so I guess what happened this week? So I know one of the big things was that Claude Code had code leak or whatever, right? So that was kind of interesting. And people were like, we get to see behind the curtain a little bit about how this works,
I will say that I just kind of read the headlines. So many GitHub tabs open. They're like, that's hopefully my plan for the weekend to figure out what did we learn? I don't know. Anything you guys pay attention?
Not in particular. I mean, the thing that I read about that, that's fun. But
Yeah, I don't think there were any huge aha moments, but I think the funny joke about it is that we were using AI to do all these amazing things, we don't write a single line of code anymore. Now it's all Claude that does it. But you know what? It's still going to get you.
Humans.
We left an S3 bucket open to the internet. Come on.
Oh man, humans are always going to be humans will always be part of this. And in a way, this is the argument for to say this is why we shouldn't have humans. But then the question is, would it fully AI do this?
I don't know.
Always going to be in the loop.
We're going to replace probabilistic humans with probabilistic agents, right?
That's the thing.
Still probabilistic.
It's at the end of the day, people are like, but can we trust the agents to go to this? Can you trust your humans to go to this? There's a reason why we have policies and procedures in place, because humans can do dumb shit.
And given the choice, I wonder, would you, this is like the, when you go shopping and at the till, there's a human till and there's a machine one. Which one are you going to pick? I mean, in the end, are you going to trust more the human than who's going to make less mistakes? I mean, there you go. Yeah. So it's
true.
The other topic I've had with a couple of people this week is about operational and strategic, that we're automating so much stuff, and they're going to be automating a lot of the operational work. So that means that you're going to have time left over, and then it'll be 80-20 rule. So you still be 20. There's 20% of the operational work that human needs to be involved.
Yeah.
Right. Just hopefully don't release something that you're not supposed to release. Right. But that means that they're going to be focusing, you have more time, which you should use that to be more strategic around things. But then you can't have too many searches, you people, then it's too many blah, blah, blah. So then this is really like, you got to really start focusing, like start getting more, what is your area of expertise? You got to put your eggs in a basket. And that, so I think generalists are, if you're an operational person, is the opportunity to become more strategic. If you're already doing strategy, you need to start getting more kind of a business focus. And I think that's kind of I mean, that's a hypothesis I have right now. I've kind of been
Talking to folks about that. If we're going to do, you know, with these efficiencies that we're introducing, are we going to do more? Are we going to, I mean, one area, we're going to experiment a lot more. I mean, there's lots of things that, I mean, projects that you would have parked. Now, you know, the cost of experimentation has dropped to zero, right?
I think that's very true.
What we're going to do with these extra time? Become more strategic, you know, more experimental? Is it going to be
I wasn't thinking about that. I think that's a good point. Like, we can become more experimental and kind of we can test a lot more things faster. But I think you should be strategic around that too, because then you're like, oh, I can test a bunch of stuff that I'm like, well, did we really need to go do that? Or like, then it's also like, the expense, right? And how I can do a bunch of experiments, so it's going to cost me. Let's actually go optimize which experiments to go do, and that's the thing, part of the strategy.
True.
So, anyways, this is going to be really fun. It is already fun times.
It's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think is interesting about what we're talking about right now is like, I'm keeping my eye on like how much are we expecting that like people are going to have to like just work way harder. Like the expectations of your productivity is just so much higher now. Like, even I was just thinking about, you know, it's Friday and, you know, it's the end of the week. And I was just looking back at my week and I'm like, man, I created like 10 presentations. I created like
your personal assistant?
Well, that's the whole point.
Six different Word documents.
Yeah.
Claude helped me. Right. And so, like, you know, I would never have done that in a normal work week. Right. Like, and so now I'm thinking back, like, is this the new normal?
Like, the question is,
what about people who aren't doing this, right? But I'm out PowerPointing them 10 to 1.
Yeah, but then we have now thousands of dashboards. We'll have 1,000 and 1,000 more.
Now you have 10,000 dashboards.
And then are people actually looking at this stuff? Are they going to still have the AIs?
Your agents are looking at it.
Summarizing it for them, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. If you send somebody a Word doc, are they just going to ask Copilot to summarize it for them, right? Like, I don't know. More Word docs, less reading?
Yeah, another interesting one you're talking about specialists before is, you know, the kind of the efficiency increase that you get is so proportional to the skills of the person. I mean, you get so much of these assistants if you ask the right questions, if you drive them in the right direction. So not everyone is getting the same kind of, you know, performance boost. I think that's an interesting angle as well. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so the more experienced senior you are, you know how to go use this more, so you'll be much more productive. And that's a good point too. So honestly, it's actually a moment for like senior folks to be more super productive, and hopefully they can use that time. The ones who want to give back and kind of help junior folks.
Yeah,
like that's an even and a half.
We'll find out. I mean, all these things.
All right. Let's talk about knowledge graphs, context graphs, all this stuff.
Of course.
Wait. What's on your mind?
I mean, I was mentioning, I was presented, like, I think it was last week, a couple of weeks ago, at QCon in London on ontologies, and there was explicitly the organizers, you know, this was kind of not an EFJ thing, but genuine interest in ontologies, and I'm really fascinated by that, because you and I have spent quite a bit of time many years ago, and I opened with this kind of Google Trends chart, right? Searches on ontologies. I mean, it was peaking in 2004, flat for many years. And now, you know, peaking again in 2026, which is great. I mean, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's great. And I'm trying to, I mean, not make sense, but yeah, what's noise? What's real? What's value? I mean, is it what's driving all this? I mean, how suddenly people have become convinced that you have to? Of course, the driver is AI, you know, and the kind of general intuition is that these ontologies are going to help your agents be more precise, more controlled, more trustable. But I'm curious. I don't know what you guys think, but it's you know, there's definitely a lot of talking. I don't know if there's a lot of doing yet.
I think
I don't know where these things are going.
There's a lot of talking for sure. There's a lot of interest. It's interesting to me that there's a pretty big gap, at least at the moment, between companies that maybe have had ontologies or had been working on ontologies for a while, especially in the financial services industry, but, you know, in other industries as well, who have been kind of at the bleeding edge on this for a while now, versus a lot of companies that are they're asking questions and exploring, but they don't, I don't think, you know, there's a long tail of companies that don't necessarily know where it should be applied yet, right? I think they're seeing like, okay, we're trying to do all this stuff with AI. Obviously, like, it needs context, it needs knowledge, that's going to help. A formal representation of knowledge should be an ontology. Okay, and I want to build a knowledge graph. Okay, like, I'm there. Where should I start? Do I need to build an ontology? Do I need to buy a graph database? Do I need to buy a catalog? Do I need to, you know, I think that's a lot of people are thinking about this right now. That's where I see.
So I want to go back before we started this. We were having a discussion about how we were defining ontology, and we agreed on this. And I think it was a good framework for that. So let me go repeat it, and then you go kind of clarify if I missed anything. So kind of if we think about a definition, kind of three aspects about it. Well, first of all, an ontology, you're modeling a domain, right? The domain of interest around things. And there's three characteristics around this. So one is for it to be formal, right? So you're limiting ambiguity. And for one of it to be explicit, meaning that it's really declarative. You're defining the what, not the how. And the third one is that it should be a shared understanding about that domain. So if we kind of hit those three things, then I'm like, yes, that is an ontology. So yeah, it's a formal, it's an executable language. So you've eliminated ambiguity around that. But then you also apply kind of, so that's kind of the three characteristics. Mm-hmm. But then you also brought up like two aspects of how you would be using that. One of them is how you are trying to go use it to automate things, right? Exactly. And then and depending on that automation task, you need to add more semantics, more constraints or stuff, maybe very little, depending on your
book.
Depending on the domain, very good. And then another one, which is kind of where I've always come from, is more on the interoperability, enterprise capabilities. I want to be able to do something that I can kind of integrate data coming from sources and so forth. Okay, let me stop there and
totally.
You react.
I mean, the last two is the why. I mean, why would you build an ontology? And yes, on the what is an ontology, I agree. This is kind of the sort of the one of the
standard definition. But it's really important to kind of curl put out those three things. But I like that you're saying these are the two things for the why.
Yeah, these are, because why would you build an ontology in the first place? That's the thing. And mm-hmm. the, you know, probably the most common one is interoperability, right? Because people think of it as, I don't know, and that's my hypothesis. But people, when they think that ontologies are going to make agents or LLMs more precise, maybe it's because it's a way of formally describing your domain. So you're passing, you know, as context to the LLM, what are the key entities in your domain? How they relate to each other? How, you know, what are the properties? So this is kind of the core part of an ontology, if you don't go into the more sophisticated constructs in it. So yeah, interoperability is that let's speak the same language, right? So at the team level, at the department level, at the organization, at the industry level, because there's,
I like that. Let's just speak. I think it would be good if we spoke the same language.
That's
right?
Interoperability. That's one of the reasons why you would build an ontology. Let's align with this language, and like this, you know, when we exchange.
And that is going to avoid wasting resources, all that type of thing.
And that's where the consensus part is. You know, that's part of the definition. Why would you want consensus? Because you want to interoperate. That's it.
So and that's what I would argue that you would want to have on that kind of shared understanding. You need to have shared understanding more at a more global macro level.
Exactly.
And so then for the other use case, the other why.
The other why is these are formal constructs. So that's part of the definition as well. Formal is something that's machine readable. Machine readable now is generalized to anything that's machine readable, LLMs. But formal is in, yeah, unambiguous, like, you know, according to a structured definition of and what the reason why you want that to be formal and machine readable is because you're going to build some automated thing on it. So why do you want to formalize that? Because you want to detect inconsistencies, because you want to detect violations when your data does not follow the ontology, because you want to derive new things, because you want to do some inferencing in the symbolic sense. You know, don't want to throw in pedantic, you know, pedantic man, so many.
And in that case, which is the whole shared understanding doesn't have to be generally local, global, or whatever.
That's important. But the thing is, I don't think we have to be religious, not one or the other. I mean, these are why would you build something? I want to formalize that because I want to exchange. I want my teams, I want my organization to align on this terminology because that's going to simplify. So that's why would I, if in my case, this is less important, what I want to do is be explicit about the declarative nature of my data so that I can build some code that's more future-proof because it's not hard coding what I want to do on my data. It's kind of behaving depending on my definition. So it's kind of, I mean, think about the ontology as a configuration file. I mean, you have and that's the interpretation of general purpose inferencing engines. I mean, you have an old inferencing engine that understands all. So have some logic, some software that does something with it. That's important to understand, I think. Ontologies, in a way, the passive part, I mean, it's the definition, it's the descriptive part, but they on their own, they do nothing.
They, 100%.
So you have to have something
that is consuming it, using it.
So on the interoperability side of things, that would be, okay, now we're going to, this is something that's formal, I can share with that team and they can build their API according to that. But on these kind of more programmatic or automation side of things, I can have some software that reads that and does something with it. But the ontology in itself is where we agree, where we formalize. So that's, I think this is, for me, it's important to articulate the value and the why of
For companies that are not that haven't been doing ontologies in the past, but they're trying to get into it. Are you seeing certain use cases where it's more the trigger?
I think, I mean, it's not a use case in itself, but now the big trigger is AI, right? Yeah. It's like and there's two parts in that. So
like, does it start with like a chat with data use case? Like somebody's like, oh, I really wish I could ask this question, or is it something else sometimes?
I think there's two parts. Yeah. You know, a lot of the use cases that we're seeing with AI is building agents that can work on unstructured data. Mm-hmm. So and the way to make unstructured data useful for agents is basic approach is, well, you chunk it, you vectorize it, but then you're kind of limited. Mm-hmm. But sometimes what you want to do is extract something more meaningful and better structured out of it. And that's where you can overlay an ontology and say, hey, what I care about is this product, dependencies, features. So if you describe that in an ontology and you feed that to an LLM, then the LLM can do an informed extraction and say, I'm not going to take anything. I'm going to get something that aligns with your understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's, I don't know if it's a use case, but that's a common pattern. That's what we see ontologies being used. So that's a description of kind of my tag, my vision of the world, what I care about. And then on the retrieval side, it applies in the same way. So once you have this formal description, you can pass that to the LLM. So if it, you know, the LLM will access the data in many different ways, or the agent, let's call it, right? Mm-hmm. So you would either make structured queries, right? So you can, you guys are familiar with this, right? So if you have an ontology describing your domain, the quality of the queries that's going to be LLM is going to generate is going to be higher, right? The quality of the, but there's other patterns for that. So I think this sort of it's like the guidelines, like you using that either for construction, also for consumption, and that's how you get to guide and get to inform the behavior of LLMs. And
one of the things that I'm excited about, we talked about this before, is like now with the LLMs, like we're accelerating the way of how to go do the data modeling, all that knowledge engineering work. So building these ontologies should be easier to go do. Yeah. But then also it's like, we're talking about like changing your modeling. You start keeping track of the decision traces, the why, which connects back to like the whole the context stuff. So I think this is, we were talking before, kind of getting into the context topic, is like you start thinking about and designing with that, the management of that why, the management of the decision traces from the beginning, which will help you to saying, this is, we built something this way, we made a decision this way, right? We acted, and this is the reason why we did that. And you have all these long decision traces, which at the end, that's your context.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting is that now the presence of agents in some processes simplify the capture of this extra knowledge, the extra why. Because if you think of it, when we build a semantic layer on top of data, it's because we're kind of reconstructing, bringing back basically the knowledge that was lost. Because what happened back then probably is some experts came up with an entity relationship model that ultimately got translated into relational, a physical model. Mm-hmm. And then all that was documentation and it's lost. And then we know what, you know, the meaning of that database is because of the queries that we run or some. So we're kind of rebuilding that. So if now we have ways of capturing every decision, as in, yes, that's my domain, that's my ontology. But then we implemented that as a, you know, as a table applying this denormalization because we wanted to optimize this particular workload. So these can be captured now. And that's valuable information. If you build it in process by design, then you're kind of building a context.
This is why I think like, now we were calling them AI native companies, right? But basically any company today created, they're going to be, if they do this right, but I think the barrier to do it right is kind of low now because it's just, the LLMs will help you to do this. The spaghetti mess that legacy companies have gotten into, and the issues of interoperability is something that new companies being formed today are not going to have, and that's going to make them speed up so much. And actually, one of the reasons why new companies are actually going to be able to catch up to legacy companies, to other companies.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I mean, I was describing, it's not only. I mean, there's things that we've been doing for a long time. I was describing the example of using agents, and a lot of companies are doing this. I mean, the whole construction of ontologies. I mean, it used to be perceived as, hey, you have to apply, arcane methodologies where you need an expert. I mean, yes, you need experts, but now having an agent in the loop, I mean, it's like, yeah, you give me the, your competency questions. Why are you building an ontology in the first place? What do you want to answer? What do you want to do with it? Give me some sample data. I mean, because ultimately the ontology is going to be the skeleton, the schema, but you're going to apply it to some data to do something, right? Mm-hmm. So we're always driving with the why. So if you give me that, if you give me the competency question, and if you give me eventually some pre-existing models that you want to build on top of, that you want to reuse, some industry standards, some company terminologies, catalog or whatever, if you give me these three elements, an agent is going to do a very, very good job at creating a first draft of the ontology. And then you, as an expert, you can say, hey, that's great, but that doesn't capture this particular case. And then that's another iteration that your agent can be the scribe of, so they can capture that. So in the end, you end up with an accelerated process of modeling development, mm-hmm. And you have managed to capture the why. So if you build it by designing these kind of processes, you then can.
And this is not just for ontology, this is for all software, everything
now. Exactly. this is an example that I'm seeing, in our teams, because, again, modeling graphs is, in the end, is finding an ontology. So yeah, I think that's where real value is going to be. Now if we get a customer that use something like this, an agent like this one to prototype, and even a customer prospect, if we get the model that they came up with along with a trace of how they got to that, so that gives you all the context to have a meaningful conversation with them. It's not like, why did you do that? I mean, it's like suddenly something that used to be a 5-day workshop becomes like, I have everything I need here. We can have a meaningful. So this is fascinating. And this is kind of one obvious, implement materialization of this idea of context graphs, whether we want to call them that or not. But
going back to the whole context graph decision traces stuff is like the question I have. I mean, you're seeing everything in the industry and everybody talking about this right now. It's like, is this going to be a feature or its own little platform and stuff? And, who knows? I think it's going to be more features. But.
Yeah, possible. I mean, I like again, and this is I like the fact that maybe accidentally, maybe intentionally, it was somehow associated with the idea of a graph. And I love how graphs are kind of the substrate of so many, not only data access, as like the ontology is a graph in itself, and it mm-hmm. tells you the lens through which you should look at your data. But now it turns out that capturing the context, the why of what you do things, happens to be naturally captured as a graph. So mm-hmm. I love how this kind of graph thinking, is materializing in so many fronts.
It's coming to the fore in a lot of different use case, different areas, right? Different usage patterns. Oh, it's exciting. Yeah, I don't know if context graph is going to be its own space, right? But I think what's interesting is this idea of the feedback loop. And learning from decisions, learning from what works and what doesn't. If you fundamentally approached data problems, application problems with a mindset of you're unleashing agents and you want them to get smarter over time, that's a very different way of thinking about solving problems than, I'm creating a database or something like that. So something's different is going to happen. I don't know that we know exactly what it is yet.
I think the feedback loop. We're feedback loops are becoming, let's say, more of a first class citizen, because like think about it, like we do a thumbs up, thumbs down, like that's a very basic thing to go do that, right? And so that you're capturing something there, right? People like it. But even like before that, you're like, we generate a system is doing something, taking an action, right? There's metadata about that, right? What is that system? Where is it? What time did it? All this type of stuff. But then it's also generating the logs, right? Of what it, what's happening, who's happening, what to do, all that stuff. Those logs, what we call the exhaust, like that is the context. Like the context comes from that. But we've always been generating logs. I mean, that's why, that's why big data was a thing, because we had so much logs, we wanted to go mine the logs and stuff like that, right? But we treat it as an exhaust. Oh, that's the thing you do afterwards. But now here the point is saying, no, I want to formalize what I'm actually doing and capturing. I want to capture that in a formal and not just in this logs and this exhaust. Exhaust is actually kind of like a negative word to say. And then I want to go do something with it and learn it, like it better. So it's like that exhaust, I'm capturing it and in a well documented ontology way, whatever. And then I want to do something with that, the feedback loop. So that's the thing to change it. That's where I see this whole decision tree, this context tree coming in. And if you do that by design, that's awesome. You get to learn things faster, more than anybody else.
Yeah, logs is like, you know, the only purpose is troubleshooting. I mean, you see things go wrong, I'm going to go look at the log and find out what happened.
But the whole point is like, you want to know is like, I want to know if something is about to go wrong.
Exactly.
And then if something is going to go wrong, how to go fix that, because I've seen the patterns. Like,
it's the same idea of data, right? Data was a byproduct of applications until we realized that, hey, data is actually the real life. It outlives applications.
This is the patterns that we're seeing. Yeah. It needs to be realized. None of this stuff is new. Like from a pattern perspective, like, we focused on this thing A and A throughout B. And then we realize, oh, this B is also important. And then we focus on B, and then B throws out the thing called C. Oh, we think it's C is important. The pattern continues over and over again.
That's funny. Yeah.
It's all meta. So this is
the meta
all these things, right? So the anyways, anything else on your mind?
Yeah, no, that's probably the what else? What did we, you know, in the prep talk about? I mean, this I'm really happy to see the popularity of ontologies, and the other thing is like, should we be strict about it? Should we, you know, be universal about it? Should we is anything that somehow aligns with this definition that we came up with, or didn't come up with, that we agreed on? Is this valid? Is it taking us in the right direction, or should we be like? Because in one way, we're happy to see this happening, because we believe that there's value in it. But then, how, you know, is there a risk in accepting something partially aligned with this definition as an ontology? Is there a risk of do we have to be purist about it? I mean, I know this is one of your. Was it 20 lessons of 20 years?
Oh, just don't be pedantic about the stuff, right? And remember that ontology is a means, not an end.
I think that's the key. I mean, always, and you were being kind to people, say, hey, people are getting into it. Let's make it. But in general, not just ontologies, you have to start with the why. I mean, why, you know what you're real, you know, why you're building this, and what are you going to, that's what I was telling you before, that it's great to see that people are saying, hey, I've vibe coded, or I've created, you know, a new ontology, you know,
editor
or whatever. That's great. But that's, in a way, that's the easy part. I mean, formalizing the ontology. Now, what are you going to do with it? Right? How are you going to use it? I want to see people building, hey, I built some software that takes an ontology and does this. And because that's closer to value, right? So the ontology is a means to an end. But then if you build something that takes that ontology and accelerates that process, or give you, you know, that's what I would love to see. And that's where we would move from talking about ontologies and ontologies as an end. The end is value, right?
So for folks listening and you're getting excited and getting to ontologies, share with us.
Absolutely.
You tag us on any post, whatever, what you're actually doing with the ontology. Don't just say, oh, I built this tool to help ontology. I mean, share what you're actually doing with it. That helps us all figure out helps the community. So
we're all learning right now.
All right, man. Cheers.
Salud.
Cheers.
Salud. Yeah. Thanks for folks. Hey, there are some folks around here. Hello, Ramona, and hello, Jason. Thanks for joining us. Have a happy Friday.
Have a great
Friday, everyone.
Cheers.